Good morning, everyone. I did bring a few postcards related to the site that I'm going to be presenting today. I'm sorry, I don't know that I have enough for everyone in the room, but for those of you that are interested in scanning our QR code and playing around with our site as I walk through the presentation, you're welcome to do so. So as Maya mentioned, my name is Amber Canto. I work with the University of Wisconsin Extension Cooperative Extension. And today I'm going to be talking to you about our Wisconsin Food Security Project, which is a data and mapping resource for community planners and advocates. I have no relationships to disclose. And I do want to give thanks and acknowledgments to those that helped us get the site up and going, Judy Bartfeld, who's my co-collaborator on this project, as well as the University of Wisconsin Applied Population Lab, which did all of the technical support and construction of the site with the interfaces. We had wonderful students who provided data support. We had wonderful partners who provided information and data to populate the site. And then, of course, the University of Wisconsin Extension and our University of Wisconsin School of Human Ecology, who provided financial support to the site. Today's learning objectives are just two, describing a framework for assessing and evaluating the food insecurity and food security infrastructure at the state and local level, and then I'll also demonstrate to you how our framework can be used to organize secondary data and visualize disparities in food access and the food infrastructure, informing community assessment and planning processes through this use of an online data and mapping portal. So this first slide here shows a screenshot of our homepage for the mapping component of the Wisconsin Food Security Project. The initial version of the site was created in the early 2000s, and we've recently updated it to accommodate advances in technology and this growing interest in accessing data to support the delivery of community programs. I think perhaps accompanying this in terms of interest is this growing interest in food access and food security and how we can access data to really provide, inform our community improvements and our community initiatives. We're really hoping that this site is an easily accessed and highly utilized source of information to food security in the state of Wisconsin. So to ground our conversation today, I thought I'd start off with a little bit of data to give you a glance of what food security looks like in the state of Wisconsin. And currently, we have about 11.2% of the state of households that are considered food insecure. And we know that food insecurity has increased in the last 15 years, with almost all of this change occurring since 2008. And much of these increases in food insecurity are tied to poverty and unemployment, which occurred after the 2008 recession. Just to show it in another format, we can see our major changes of food insecurity, particularly from the 2005-2007 perspective or year range, where we had 9% of households food insecure, which jumped up to just about 12% in 2008 and 2010. So we can also see in this graph that Wisconsin fares better than the nation as a whole, but really this better off sort of nation as a whole is masking pretty significant regional variations in food insecurity. So here's another map to just show how the food hardship rates are varied across the state. So we can see ranges of food hardship from just under 8%, so 7.7, to nearly 22% across the state. And this is by congressional district. And food hardship is a measure of households having enough money to buy the food that they needed over the past year. So our highest rate of food hardship in the state is in District 4, which is the southeastern part of the state. That also corresponds to Milwaukee County or City. Our lowest rates of food hardship are just outside of Milwaukee County or City, just north and to the west in District 5, where we see the 7.7. So these regional variations in risk and prevalence of food insecurity make it pretty difficult to understand what's happening at the community level when we just look at our state average. And so we constructed this foundation framework for food security, which includes four pillars. And the four pillars are economic security, access to healthy and affordable food, a strong federal food and nutrition program system, and a robust emergency charitable system. These four pillars really work together to ensure community infrastructure to food access in the community. So for example, economic security. We know that poverty is one of the greatest risk factors for food insecurity and that a number of factors contribute to promoting economic security and thus supporting a household food budget that's resilient enough to ensure the purchase of safe, affordable, and healthy foods. Oftentimes, our food purchases are the most elastic and the last to be considered when we're thinking through all of our other household expenditures. So to the extent that we're able to support economic security through sufficient jobs at living wages, affordable housing and health care, adequate and affordable and also accessible transportation options, and an adequate safety net, the more we can do to contribute to food security locally. We also know, of course, that our federal food and nutrition assistance programs are critical to ensuring safe and healthy meals across the lifespan. So things like WIC, SNAP, school meals, the CACFP program, and summer meal programs all go into taken into account when we think about a local food security infrastructure. And then, of course, the food environment influences the access and availability of affordable and healthy foods. And we know that disparities in access to affordable, healthy foods exist across communities. When we look at some of those disparities, we know then, of course, that ensuring food security becomes more challenging in environments with limited options of reasonably priced foods. And then finally, a robust emergency charitable food system comprised of food banks, pantries, meal sites, and shelters is necessary to fill the gap for individuals and families in time of need. So not only can this framework assist the construction of the site's interface and the organization of data, which I'll show you in just a minute, it can also really be used to support a multifaceted approach to ensuring food security and inform programming efforts locally. So getting into the construction of the site, we've got two main organization principles to our data. We've got local characteristics, which are the geographic attributes of an area. So this is secondary data that's available at the county, the school district, or municipality level. And we've categorized it into these various different bullet points of food security, economic security, food environments, federal food and nutrition programs, demographics, and health outcomes. We then have a secondary level to the map, which we are deeming local resources, which are specific food resources that contribute to food security. So these are resources that are geocoded to a specific location on the map that would allow you to visualize farmers markets, food pantries, stores that accept SNAP, summer meal programs, and public schools without a school breakfast program, for example. I wanted to just show you some of our sources of data, and so I have not an exhaustive list of all of our possible indicators on the site, but fairly extensive nonetheless, and I've organized them by our categories. So again, these are our local characteristics that are available as secondary data points. In the economic security range, we've pulled from the American Community Survey information on persons with household incomes at 185% of the federal poverty level or below, poverty rates, median household income, median rent, households without a vehicle, unemployment rates, and foreclosure rates, which we've pulled directly from some of our state partners. We also have demographic data, so race and ethnicity, language spoken at home, education level, households with children, and female-headed households. In the food insecurity category, we've pulled from FRAC, the food hardship rate, which is a Gallup survey, and also the predicted food insecurity rates for all persons and also children from Feeding America. And then in our health category, we pulled a large number of county indicators from the county health rankings, and then also from the behavioral risk factor surveillance survey. So things like adult diabetes, adult obesity, low birth weights, low income preschool child obesity rates, percent poor fair health, percent very good health, amongst the mental health and physical health day indicators as well. And finally, for federal food programs, we've largely pulled from our state partners, the Department of Health Services and Department of Public Instruction, information on food share, which is our state name for SNAP. So food share participation rates, free and reduced price meal eligibility, participation in breakfast as it relates to school meals, and WIC participation. And then for our food environment, we also have some density measures in terms of supermarkets and grocery stores, convenience stores, fast food restaurants, or beer liquor, amongst others. And so our local resources are a little bit more limited. It's much harder data to find in a reliable way. But we've pulled from the USDA Agriculture Marketing Survey and the Farmers Market Directory a list of farmers markets that accept SNAC and the WIC Farmers Market Nutrition Program. We also have a list of SNAP retailers, WIC retailers, food pantries, summer meal programs, and for public schools, we include school breakfast participation and community eligibility indicators. Again, these local resources are geocoded to their specific location so we can see their presence on the map, which I'll show you in just a minute. So our mapping feature has our site has four key features available to users, which include customized maps, the ability to create charts by time trend and also scatter plot, customized profiles that are available to download for a geographic area of interest, and then also a download data to spreadsheet, which allows individuals who really like to get messy with data to just dump everything in our site into a spreadsheet and do your own data manipulation. So I'll start by showing some of the features of the site. Again, this is our homepage of the mapping site. And once you get here, users can zoom into a specific area of interest. So you can either zoom to a county, or you can use the little scale on the map to zoom into a particular area of interest. You can then go to our local characteristics menu, and it creates a drop-down menu which has all of our various categories that I showed you of data available. You can then select which category you're interested in, and then it will provide you the geographies available for that data point to then map. You can also map local resources immediately from this site. So these, again, would be those specific geocoded sources of information. And then a really nice feature is you can also, which I'll show in a second too, is you can create a JPEG of the map if you want to use it in a presentation. So here's just a screenshot of what a local characteristic interface would look like. So here I've mapped low-income preschool childhood obesity rates at the county level. And once mapped, users can then see how their county compares with others in their region or across the state. So we can see in this particular map, we have higher rates of obesity amongst low-income preschoolers in the northern parts of the state. You can also select the range for which you want to see the data point breaks. So we have five possible breaks in data. If you're really interested in like splitting up into thirds, for example, you could do a really low third or very high third separation of the data points. Five is the maximum. And you can also use the color wheels on the left side of the site and actually manipulate the various colors for data breakpoints. So if you're really interested in very high rates of low-income preschool obesity, for example, you could change that to, say, a red, and then it would highlight more predominantly on the map. So here's another example of our mapping function, and in this case I've mapped the percent of the population with income at or below 185% of the federal poverty level, and this is at the census tract. And I've zoomed the map into Milwaukee County. And so we can see here where we have concentrated limited income in the city of Milwaukee. I've also then mapped the presence of farmers markets. So we have all farmers markets in green, and in orange stars, the farmers markets that are accepting SNAP, again, food share in Wisconsin. So we can see in the two orange markets that both of these orange stars on the map are, for the most part, located in census tracts with a higher proportion of SNAP-eligible users. And then we also have 12 markets circled, these are the green ones, a little harder to see, that currently do not accept food share, but appear to be located in neighborhoods that could potentially service a reasonable proportion of the SNAP target audience. So this is just another example of the local characteristics where I've added in those orange dots, the retailers accepting food share in WIC. And then we can just do a comparison of where those farmers markets are to those retailers. Another really nice feature is you can actually click on the data point on the map. And if we were to explore this further, we would see a lot of those orange dots in our low-income census tracts are actually convenience stores. I'll skip this one in interest of time. So we have some time trend charts that are available, and this is really limited to the data points where we have historical data, and it allows you to compare up to four counties to also the state level of changes in trends over time, and we have it for unemployment rate, SNAP participation rate, and free and reduced price meal eligibility rate. We can also do scatter plots, and this allows you to see the relationship between two variables. So on this particular map, we have food share participants as percent of the population and then the poverty rate. So we have that one outlying county on the map, which you can actually click, and it will show you which county it is and show up correspondingly on the map so you can see where in the state it's located. Our most accessible and I think favorite feature by some of our county extension folks is the ability to create customized profiles. And this is where you can actually click the various indicators of interest and download a PDF profile, which you can then hand out to local policymakers, community partners, use for grant writing, which is a very common purpose of this site. So we know that place matters when we are thinking about programming at the local level, and that while the data available on the site serves as a place to begin to identify points of inquiry, we know that the secondary data sets aren't always telling the full story, and that the local stories and knowledge are just as important. And so increasingly, as community coalitions and organizations or health departments are being asked to conduct regular community assessments in an effort to uncover local strengths and gaps, and to drive that data-driven programming, our hope is that this site, the Wisconsin Food Security Project, can be just one tool to assist with program planning and evaluation. In conclusion, this site provides a lens into the community to guide community assessments, to raise questions, to help tell that local story to residents, media, planners, and policymakers, support grant applications, and ultimately, we hope, prompt local action to strengthen food security locally. Thank you very much. And we're taking questions now. Okay. Any questions? Yes. Yep, most of our health data is coming from county health rankings. And so if you go to county health rankings and you, somewhere there's a download data function and you're able to download all of the variables that they have on their site for your own manipulation. CDC also provides county level estimates from some of the BRFSS indicators, and so we've pulled from that as well. The PEDS NSS, so the Pediatric Nutrition Surveillance Survey, is where we also got our low-income childhood obesity data. Yes?
Did you find it unexpected so far, or any surprises by
people? We hear from a lot of communities, we have a food pantry in this community, or that farmer's market isn't really showing up. And so I think what we're hearing is that our publicly sourced data sets aren't always that great in terms of the voluntary report for specific food resources. And that's really because it's voluntary report, it's only as good as those that choose to report the information. So we're trying to reframe that to, okay, what are the opportunities there for discussion? How can you use our site to then complement local efforts and do additional mapping or some additional assessment? And we've actually started to explore with discussions how we can do a little crowdsource sort of local feeds up into the site. So hopefully that'll be a future effort that we can explore further. In terms of the secondary data, I wouldn't say there's too many surprises. Some people just want to understand the variables a little bit more. So we do have on our profile PDF site an option to actually add a definition page so that individuals can then see, all right, what's the source of this data and what does this indicator actually mean? Alice. Yeah, the question was, have we marketed this to policymakers or had any connections to policymakers? So we know of a couple of local food policy councils who have incorporated the use of their site into some of their local community assessments, and then also to inform some local policy discussions. We've also started to engage some of our state representatives, mostly via their districts locally. So we provide the data to our county extension folks, who are then in touch with some of their local, state, or national representatives, and have been able to give information about what the actual issues of food security are in their congressional district or in their region. I can't say for sure that they've actually done anything with the site, but we're hoping to do a little bit more, and maybe even, I know Judy's really interested in training media on how to use the site so that we could get some media partners in to use and do some interface and tell stories. Yes. We can certainly share it. We're not able to expand due to limited capacity. There just would be no way for us to do the entire states. I think one of the tricky parts is we have, and I'm sure all extension services across the state have really great relationships with their local partners. We just have pulled directly from some of our state partner data, where the national data may be less accessible. So it provides us with sort of an added advantage to that extent. But we're happy to share the model for others who want to look at doing something similar. For a rural community? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with rural communities, it's really tricky because the census tract population information, for example, creates then just such a huge geographic region of what you're looking at. Sometimes it doesn't really tell you as much. And so one, using this framework of the four table legs and maybe exploring indicators across all four to get a better feeling for what's really happening locally might be able to guide you in a direction of, okay, this is what we need to look into further. But I think you're right, the crowdsourcing and then using the site in conjunction with other community assessment tools, for example, the change tool or some community food security assessment tools, I think would be really useful because it gives you the access to the data points, but then it also supports the points of inquiry of what should we be looking at or asking more questions about. Yes.